This is News in No Time. Ed Gordon on today's roundtable, the new Supreme Court nominee, and 10 years later, the verdict of O.J. Simpson. Just two of the issues we'll talk about on today's roundtable. Joining us from our Washington, D.C. headquarters, Jeffrey Johnson, host and producer of the Cousin Jeff Chronicles, seen on BET. Republican strategist Tara Settmeyer joins us today from Key West, Florida. And George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service, joins us from Maryland. Folks, thanks for joining us. We were going to get right into the O.J. Simpson verdict, but of course today's big news from the White House is the nomination of Harriet Myers to sit in the soon-to-be vacant seat for the Supreme Court, the Sandra Day O'Connor seat. I have done a lot of roundtables. I have been guest on other programs, pundits, if you will, suggesting who was indeed going to receive this seat. I can say without question, George Curry, I had not heard the name Harriet Myers raised. Many people, ABC News headline here, who is Harriet Myers, on their website. Many people asking that question today.
Well, there's a reason she wasn't on anybody's list, because she's never been a judge at any level, never even been a traffic court judge. This is, to me, an insult to qualified women who are judges across this country at every level, that you will get someone with no experience, has total allegiance to you, your personal lawyer, your White House lawyer, with no experience as a judge, and place him on the highest court in the land. I think it's an insult.
Tara Settmeyer, there are many, including George Bush, when introducing Harriet Myers to the nation just a few hours ago in a press conference, that will suggest that the court has seen others sit on it who had not been sitting judges or not been sitting judges for years. Yet there are those who suggest that their history leading up to their paper trail, as we call it, better suited them for the bench than does Harriet Myers.
Absolutely. And, let it be known that, 10 out of 35 justices since 1933 were not prior judges, including Chief Justice Rehnquist in 1971 and Byron White in 1962, who both came from within the president's administrations. So this is not something new. This is not something that hasn't been done before. And it isn't necessarily something that disqualifies them from being excellent Supreme Court justices. But what we do know about Harriet Myers, and it is an interesting choice, and I think that it is a surprise to many on both the left and the right, so I look forward to seeing how the nomination process progresses. But Harriet Myers has been a trailblazer and a pioneer, similar to Justice O'Connor. In Texas, she was the first woman president of the Texas Bar Association, the first woman to be accepted into a major law firm in Texas. And Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson said that is familiar with that as well from Texas, and said that was no small feat considering the barriers, the gender barriers that existed at that time. So, Harriet Myers is no stranger to adversity, and she has been a trailblazer in the past. And, I think what's going to happen is that people are going to, the Senate Democrats have already said that she represents a clean slate. And this was a politically shrewd choice by the administration. Because of that, the Democrats are going to be, it's going to be difficult for them to find a paper trail to necessarily criticize her from one end or the other.
But Jeff Johnson, that can work both ways,
yes,
with no paper trail, good and bad.
Sure can, and I think it's important to reiterate, and I guess I want to kind of disagree on some levels, that despite the fact that she was the first female partner in her law firm, and despite the fact that she was the first female head of the Dallas and Texas Bar, there are a number of attorneys out there in the country who have that kind of record. It is really obvious, and there continues to be a pattern of Bush's nominations, and whether it's to the Supreme Court or whether it's to FEMA or whether it's to the FDA, there continue to be those that are selected for no other reason than because of their close relationship. And so as, to get back to your question, as they begin to review this lack of documentation, it really is going to be imperative that the Senate Judiciary Committee ask pointed questions, and that there's really a demand for straight answers from the nominee, so that not only the committee, but hopefully the American public can have a real indication of who this woman is and what kind of decision she'll make on the bench.
George Curry, what of the idea of the cronyism that people will say is rampant in the Bush administration, particularly coming out of the Michael Brown situation in FEMA? This does make it a very, very interesting choice.
Yeah, but it's not unique. You got to be fair. I mean, you know, John Kennedy appointed his brother as Attorney General, so it's not unprecedented. But clearly this is heavily politicized. But I want to go back to the earlier point I made, and that is, you think about the women who have really earned it, who have served the time, who have proven their ability on the bench, and to pass over all of them for someone who has no experience, I think it's a slap in the face.
Well, I also don't think that it's fair to say that she has no experience. She's not
no experience as a judge. She has zero. She has zero as a judge.
Secretary, deputy chief of staff, White House counsel, and you know she has an esteemed record as a as a lawyer, which several other Supreme Court justices have had as well. So I think it's unfair to minimize her accomplishments.
I'm not minimizing her accomplishments. I'm saying she has no experience as a judge.
No, but the argument here, George, and I think Tara is making it, is the idea that historically we have seen, and quite frankly, about half of the justices that have sat on the Supreme Court have not had previous sitting judge experience. They have had much legal experience in their background, but not necessarily as a sitting judge.
In recent years, most of our appointees to the Supreme Court have been distinguished judges. Not all of them. I can think of a couple of them right off hand, but not all of them. But in recent years, yeah, sure, you can go back. But in recent years, most of them have come from the appeals level, not even district court level.
Chair, let me ask you this as a Republican strategist. How much, and give you the question I gave to George Curry, the idea of just political timing for this president coming off of the FEMA flap and people looking more closely, the scrutiny being larger in terms of who he appoints in his inner circle. Is this something that you think might backfire, the idea that there were probably others just as, if not more qualified than Ms. Myers, who would not have been labeled with the cronyism sticker?
Well, I think this choice has opened him up for that potential criticism. That was the other side of what I was going to say before, that it was a shrewd choice in that she does represent a clean slate, and that it was similar in the way that she headed up the vetting committee for Supreme Court nominees as Vice President Dick Cheney headed up the vetting committee for potential vice presidential nominees, and he became the actual nominee. And so in that case, it kind of blindsided many critics because they didn't see this coming. However, I do agree that the fair criticism will arise whether this appears to be cronyism or not. And I think that you're going to see some muted criticism from conservatives and from insiders, which I've already seen, about whether this was a good choice considering the timing. So I think that this is going to be something that will be raised, and I think it's fair criticism. But that's what the President of the United States has the luxury to nominate who he wants to, and I look forward to the Senate. That's why we have Senate nomination hearings for.
All right, Jeff, let me ask you this. Let me
get familiar with her.
All right, Jeff, let me ask you this as it relates to that process. Now, we saw many people suggested that John Roberts, to a great degree, was rubber stamped by this committee, and that even Democrats who may not have loved the nomination knew that his background was such it would have been a hard fight. Mm-hmm. One has to believe that because so few people know about Harriet Myers, that you will see a contentious at best questioning coming from Democrats on the Senate committee. One raises the question here, if in fact she takes the Roberts route and does not give much, quite frankly, by means of answers to her ideology and the like, do you expect that Democrats will be brave enough to say no?
I'm not going to say what I expect. I'm going to say what I hope. And I hope that the Democrats are brave enough. I mean, we recognize how important this seat is. And you know, I think the many Democrats conceded a great deal with Roberts because they were no longer viewing it as that 5-4 O'Connor seat that was so important. This is going to be very different. And so I do believe, and I will go out on expectation, I do think that some Democrats will be strong enough to be able to ask some of the strong questions, to be forceful in a way that they weren't during Roberts. And the fact that there is a lack of record to lean on is going to force them to. And so I'm hopeful that they ask strong questions and pointed questions so that we are able to see who this woman is, what kind of decisions she's going to make on the bench. And I'm hoping that we're able to that she's able to demonstrate one way or the other her belief in the fundamental commitment to basic constitutional rights and the role of Congress in protecting all Americans. That's what the court is there for. And that's hopefully what both Democrats and Republicans alike will ask questions of this nominee.
George Curry, you talk to a lot of people on the Hill. Do you expect, in fact, that the Democrats will move to a filibuster, if you will, if they don't get the kind of answers they believe they should from this nominee?
I'm going to go on a limb. I hate to bet my money on Democrats what they're going to do on the Capitol Hill, but I think they will fight this nomination. I think they will go to the mat on this nomination because there's a world of difference between her and John Roberts. John Roberts not only was an appeals court judge for a short period, albeit, but had practiced extensively before the Supreme Court, had clerked the Supreme Court. There's a world of difference between the qualification of these two people, and I think they will fight on this one.
And I would surprised. I don't disagree with you, George.
All right. Well, this is obviously the first day of a number of days where we will continue to look at this. The marking of an interesting anniversary, and that's the 10-year verdict, the criminal verdict of O.J. Simpson, one that many people suggested caused us to take a real look at race in this country. George, a decade later, what's the most surprising element of all of the aftermath of that verdict to you?
And then anybody cares. We should be interviewing you on Ed, because you don't want to get an exclusive interview with O.J. We should turn the tables on you.
I'm forever tied to Mr. Simpson. but that being said, it did raise an interesting point of race and what we like to call how we see things through our own prisms.
Sure. It exposed it in the raw, and we see the same way in Katrina, which is interesting because that was much more neutral. But, I mean, the O.J. Simpson case was a volatile case, and people were actually defending O.J. who really didn't care for him because it really came down to a raw racial emotion in terms of how people looked at the criminal justice system.
Jeff, you wanted to say?
Yeah, and I think that there continue to be, whether it's a case or whether it's a tragedy, whether it's history being uncovered, for instance, the Emmett Till case, I think there continue to be instances that rear their ugly head, if you will, within our country that challenges us on race. I think the problem, Ed, is that we continue to ignore it. And the real issue is, when can we as a country have an honest dialogue about the issue of race, about past wrongs that have been done, and more importantly, about how to constructively move forward? And until we do that, looking back at O.J. Simpson and saying, you know, in 10 years later, how has it affected us, will be the same way we talk 10 years after Katrina and say, did this issue that brought up so many concerns about race in this country lead to legitimate dialogue, whether it's on an academic level or a social level or a political level, but did it lead to legitimate dialogue that kind of took us over the hump in what's just been the giant pink elephant in the room that we as Americans failed to talk about?
And the short answer to that, unfortunately, is no. No, it did not. It you know, race in terms of conversation in this country happens in segregated arenas only, unfortunately. Tara, let me ask you about whether you're surprised at the continual visceral response to O.J. Simpson some 10 years later, quite frankly, from white America. As George has already put it, to some degree, to a great degree, black America has moved on. And when you mention O.J. Simpson, there is very little reaction one way or the other. But there seems to be still a large visceral reaction from much of white America when you bring this man up.
That's very true. And I think that what surprises me about that is the way that white America still really has no idea about the racial disparities that take place in the criminal justice system. I think with what O.J. Simpson did and what Katrina has done, these are issues that have highlighted the very starkly contrasted views between blacks and whites when they look at issues of race. And as the O.J. Simpson verdict was one of those events that I will always remember where I was, what I was doing, similar to September 11th, or it was a huge event. I was in college at the time, and I can remember watching the students of Howard University cheering and high-fiving and feeling sick to my stomach about that, because here we knew it was rather obvious that this man was guilty, but a non-guilty verdict was returned because it was purely about race. And
Tara, let's be fair. Some will take issue with that full characterization.
Well,
some will suggest that the prosecution.
They may.
Some will suggest the prosecution didn't do what they needed to do. That's part of the interest and intrigue of this entire case.
That's true. But there's also, I think, an exercise in cognitive dissonance almost on the part of Black America, where there are many who thought that he was guilty, but their behavior was contradictory because they celebrated his non-guilty verdict because it was a way to stick it to the system that has demonstrated injustices for so long. And I just think it was unfortunate that a case like this one was what was used to demonstrate that example. But we continue to see. I mean, Frontline on PBS is going to do a story on this tomorrow where they're going to examine the role of race rather than justice necessarily that was played played out throughout the trial. And again, it just magnifies the stark contrast between the way blacks and whites view things in this country. I think it's fascinating, and I think it's going to continue to resonate for another 10 years. I think we'll be able to look back and see whether there have been any changes or not.
George, any lessons learned here? Are we going to have better and further and more appropriate conversation about race after Katrina?
I think we should have them about race, but we shouldn't limit this case to just race. I mean, you had a skilled lawyer there, Johnny Cochran, who was able to defend his client. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit. They did not prosecute, had a persuasive case. They lost. That does not just come down to race. There was much more involved than race.
Jeff, do you believe that we're going to see, with about 15 seconds, national discourse on race in this country anytime soon?
No. But I do think that there's a younger generation that has less of the stigma that some elder generations have, and I think there's some hope to do that.
All right. Well, I thank you all. Greatly appreciate a very, as I often say, spirited discussion. Appreciate it.